We recorded this episode on May 27th, and we did it while self-isolating at our homes because of the novel coronavirus. Many of you may be self-isolating right now, too.
So this will probably sound a little different from earlier episodes. You might hear some background noise that we usually don't have in the studio, but that's part of the new normal that we're all adjusting to as we stay home to help flatten the curve during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Of course, the new coronavirus and COVID-19 are very much on everyone's minds, and Live Science is covering the latest news. You can find updates on our website that will keep you up to date on the most recent developments around the world.
But we also hope that by continuing to bring you Life's Little Mysteries, we can all continue to be reminded of the amazing science that's all around us.
Thanks for listening. Keep safe and stay healthy. Hello, and welcome to Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. I'm Gina Briner, Editor-in-Chief at Live Science.
And I'm Mindy Weisberger, a Senior Writer at Live Science. The world can be a pretty mysterious place, and we at Live Science love to ask and answer questions about mysteries big and small, about ancient civilizations, our planet and solar system, the plants and animals that live alongside us, our bodies and how they work, and technologies that we use every day.
Each episode of this podcast introduces mysterious questions, and we think the answers will really surprise you.
We'll also hear about cutting-edge research in labs and in fieldwork around the world to answer these and other intriguing science questions.
In today's episode of Life's Little Mysteries, we'll take a closer look at an involuntary bodily function that can sometimes be a little explosive: sneezing.
So this is especially timely because, you know, it's warm out, you know, the trees are releasing a lot of pollen, and I, for one, have noticed a lot more sneezing around this house.
A lot more sneezing. And also, I think, you know, the world has been, you know, we've been talking about sneezing and coughing because it can spread viruses like the coronavirus. So I think that plenty of research is looking into this and how far sneezes launch these snotballs and, you know, under various conditions. And so, you know, sneezing was kind of normal before the pandemic, but it seems like today, if you sneeze, you're going to kind of turn some heads.
Right. Well, even though coughing is what's, you know, is what's associated more with COVID-19 than sneezing, still anything that, you know, seems to send a signal that, you know, you might be sick, you know, definitely gets people looking at you. Like if you're out in public and you, you know, you cough or you sneeze, everyone turns to you and they're like, who just
did
that?
And, you know, but regardless, sneezing does serve an important bodily function, and it's a mysterious bodily function.
Well, then, okay, well, let's delve into that mystery a little bit. So why do we sneeze?
So sneezing, which in medical terms is called sternutation, which I had never heard, but another word for sneeze.
Sneeze is much more, yeah, it's much easier to say.
It really is. But it's the body's natural defense to get rid of invaders. You know, something comes into your nose before it gets into your body. This bodily function gets it out. So it prevents it. It protects your lungs. It protects other organs from whatever contaminant or whatever is causing you to sneeze.
Right. So this is the first line of defense before, you know, it can penetrate too far into your body and get someplace where it could actually do some serious damage.
Exactly.
Okay. So what is happening? What is actually going on when we sneeze?
So it does. It starts in the nose, and the mucous membrane that lines the nose basically gets irritated from whatever that is, the dust or the mites. Something irritates it. It's like a tickle. And that stimulates the nerve endings of this particular cranial nerve called the trigeminal nerve. And it's the fifth cranial nerve. And that nerve then sends a message to the brain, basically, you know, there's a foreign body in the nose right now. And then the sneeze reflex kicks in.
So this is actually a reflex, like when you bonk your knee and you just, like, you know, and you know, you're going to move your leg. You can't control it. So is this the same thing that's happening with the sneeze?
Apparently it is. And apparently it's a pretty complex, you know, reflex. It's coordinated between three different systems: the respiratory system, the musculoskeletal system, as you can imagine, when you need muscles to sneeze,
of course,
and the parasympathetic nervous system. So the result is this big or small sneeze.
Right. And well, you know, in I've heard some people, you know, give these like little small, dainty little sneezes. That is not how I sneeze.
That's not how I sneeze.
No. But so when you like, you know, so like in the circumstance where someone, you know, delivers like a really big sneeze, like how fast is that, is the air going?
So scientists, of course, have looked at this, and apparently the air shoots out at up to 93 miles per hour, which is 150 kilometers per hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So very fast.
That's way faster than I thought.
Yeah, me too.
So what are some of the common things that make people sneeze?
So it's things that you would expect. So the common cold can make someone sneeze. And then there are the things that we're experiencing now, allergens like pollen, but also pet dander. So some people are allergic to cats or dogs. And when they're around them, those, I guess, the aerosols, the dander, get into their nose and cause them to sneeze. But other things such as smoke,
right,
or pollution, those are physical irritants that actually tickle the inside lining of the nose and trigger that whole like series of steps that get to the sneeze. Also, cold air can cause people to sneeze, and even apparently pepper. And I don't know if I've ever sneezed around pepper. Have you?
Oh, well, actually, it's funny because I think like one of my earliest memories of cartoons is seeing like, is that being kind of a common joke? Is that, you know, someone uses too much pepper, it's going to make everybody sneeze. And actually, I've been noticing like as I'm doing more cooking now, because, you know,
inside,
not cooking,
yeah,
inside doing more cooking. And we do, you know, it's like we've got actually like a number of different kinds of pepper that we like to experiment with. And I've definitely noticed that if I, you know, like I put it in a bowl, because obviously, you know, the pepper particles, They're very light, and sometimes, you know, they don't just go into the bowl. They, you know, like you can see, so you get this little cloud around the top of the bowl, and some of it gets up, you know, some of it gets up your nose. Yes, it definitely does make me sneeze.
Yeah, and apparently it's an irritant. It's a chemical called piperine, and that is one of the things that's in pepper that can make you sneeze. I think also it can become aerosolized, and just the aerosols themselves can make you sneeze. But apparently that chemical can trigger a sneeze.
Okay, but there are also some even like stranger, more unexpected things,
yeah,
that can sometimes lead to sneezes,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And I have never experienced these, but one of the weirder ones that I've read about is that tweezing one's eyebrows.
I've heard of that too. Yeah, that's never happened to me. But yeah, just like something about just like the suddenness of just like plucking your eyebrows.
Maybe there's some nerve endings there. I'm not sure. But yeah, so tweezing one's eyebrows, one of the, you know, weirder ones that is probably more commonly known is photic sneezing, which is basically exposure to sunlight can cause people to sneeze. And that is, I mean, it's not common, but between 1 in 3 and 1 in 10 people apparently experience that kind of sneezing.
See, my husband talks about that. Like he said, because he insists that he does not have allergies, that nothing, you know, he's not allergic to dust, he's not allergic to cats, none of that stuff makes him sneeze, but sunlight can make him sneeze. And I don't know, I sometimes wonder, like, maybe you're actually, it's actually, you know, maybe you actually are more allergic to dust than you think you are.
Oh, right. You go outside, or maybe it's the allergens outside.
Right, right. But I think you just want to say that you're, you know, you're a sunlight sneezer because it sounds cooler than saying that you have allergies.
But Mindy, he could be, because it's between 1 in 3 and 1 in 10.
Okay,
so
this is actually a thing. Okay. Okay, fine. So he's not just making it up.
Another reason some people sneeze is because of having a full stomach. And it's called sneisation.
Why does that happen?
These sneezes are not caused by some irritant in the nose. And scientists aren't sure exactly why these things trigger sneezing. But one possibility is that there's faulty wiring in a brain region called the medulla oblongata.
Okay, so how does that work?
Well, apparently that this region of the brain controls the parasympathetic nervous system's response to certain stimuli. And the parasympathetic nervous system is sort of the one that calms us. And it takes over during digestion or after a stressful event to, you know, slow down our system. But apparently it responds to things like bright light, hunger, and even sexual arousal. And it could be the thing that a faulty wiring could trigger this sneezing, because it dictates how that nervous system is responding to those things. And apparently it makes you respond with a sneeze.
Okay. Even on top of that, there are just, you know, there are some things about sneezes that just seem like they're just kind of weird. Like there's something I've always heard is that, you know, sneezing happens in threes.
Yes.
That does seem to be a thing.
It is. And, you know, one of my older sisters sneezes in threes. And you always think that maybe they're doing it on purpose or something, but apparently no.
So why three? Why is that a thing?
Well, so one idea is that the first sneeze sort of loosens up those particles, the stuff that has, you know, gotten into your nose lining. The second sneeze pushes that stuff to the front of the nose, and then the third sneeze gets it out. Yeah, so there's a purpose to those.
Okay. That seems to make sense. So there's this, you know, there's this process where a trio of sneezes actually does the job better than just one sneeze alone would.
Exactly. And maybe for some people, it happens more often than for others.
Yeah, because it definitely seems like there are, I can think of, you know, I can think of some friends that I've had where you it's like you would count it down, like they would sneeze once and you'd know there would be two more sneezes coming.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there are the loud sneezers, right? Yeah, we were just talking about that. So why do some people seem like they're just like these power sneezers? Because I remember, like, actually I always said I got this from my mother, because I swear my mother, like, if she sneezed, you could hear her in the bed. Like, if you were in the house and she were in the backyard, you would still hear her.
Yeah, my husband's dad. Sorry, is like
Mom.
That too.
My mother's probably listening to this. I'm sorry.
Right,
oh,
right,
God,
right.
Now I feel bad. Sorry, I love you, Mom. But you're a really loud sneezer.
But you call it's a power sneezer, which is nice.
Yes.
You know, that's a good word.
Yes, a power sneezer. So why are some people power sneezers?
So it seems to be a mix of physical anatomy and personal preferences. So there was a study in 2006 that found that 45% of people sneeze differently in public than they do in private, which suggests that, you know, they can control it if they're letting this full sneeze out or not, I guess.
Okay, so you know, in the privacy of your home, you feel like you don't need to hold back. You can just let loose. Whereas, you know, like if you were out, you know, like out someplace, you probably wouldn't make as big a deal out of the sneeze. It is really satisfying to sneeze very loudly.
Right, exactly. Let it all out.
Try and make as much noise as possible.
Right, exactly. And then the physical anatomy part comes in, where lung capacity and how much you inhale, because there is an inhale, which is part of the sneeze. The more air you take in, the bigger and louder the sneeze is, because more of that is coming out in that one big, you know, achoo.
Ah. I wonder if there's been a study about whether or not opera singers have, you know, dramatically, you know, louder or more piercing sneezes than other people do because they're professional singers. So they must have improved lung capacity. Would that not make a difference?
That's so true. Any scientists out there, if they want to take that on.
We want to know.
Right. And so it's not just humans who sneeze. There are, you know, other animals that sneeze.
Right. But you don't necessarily have to have a nose to sneeze as an animal.
Right, or a brain, apparently.
Right, right. What are some examples of non-nose sneezers in the animal kingdom?
Well, apparently deep-sea sponges can sneeze. And the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute got a video of a deep-sea sponge sneezing. And the sneezes are sort of in slow motion.
How slow are they?
They can take these sponges 40 minutes to complete a sneeze. They look sort of like tulips, the sponges that they video recorded, and they contract or constrict themselves, and then they slowly open and close. But it takes a period of 40 minutes, and they aren't positive they're getting rid of particles, but that's what they think they're doing. They're getting rid of the stuff they don't want, like the junk, sneezing it out.
Yeah, I just like 40 minutes, though. I mean, you know, sometimes you're starting to sneeze and you kind of get stuck and you're just waiting for it to happen. And it's just like it's the most annoying sensation. I can't imagine that going on for 40 minutes.
Right. So good thing these sponges don't have brains. They don't have to get annoyed.
So it's probably a lot less annoying for them. OK, well, what about some, you know, other maybe more familiar animals?
Yes. Well, African wild dogs sneeze and they seem to use sneezes as a way to vote.
Voting, okay.
A 2017 study found that during a rally, because these are social animals, they would get together, mm-hmm. decide if they were going to go on a hunt or not. The more sneezes during this rally, the more likely the dogs would go on a hunt. And the researchers found if it was a low ranking or a subordinate dog that started this rally, they needed at least 10 sneezes to go on the hunt.
They're kind of communication.
Exactly.
So that's kind of an unusual example where the sneezes are being used for a specific kind of purpose, but most other animals sneeze. I mean, everyone probably remembers there was a video clip that was making the rounds on the internet a couple of years ago that was the most adorable thing ever of a tiny little baby panda sneezing.
Oh my gosh.
It was a baby, right? Like where it sneezed and it freaked out its mother?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a baby. It was
okay,
small,
so it was
though.
It was a sneezing panda that like freaked itself out by sneezing.
Yeah, maybe we'll put the link in the show notes.
Yes, I think we can. I think, yeah, we definitely, I'm pretty sure we wrote it. I'm pretty sure we did write about it.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, it's really, really cute.
So, you know, obviously if you have pets, you've probably seen your pets sneeze. And you, well, you know, Gina, you have guinea pigs. Do guinea pigs sneeze?
They do. They do.
Is
they
it very
do
cute? All,
it's, I mean, it's cute. Yes, it is cute, actually. Out of all the things they do, I think the sneezing is cute. It's not often, though, and I worry that they're sick, but they seem fine.
Our cats, it's a little, they sneeze sometimes. They seem to prefer to do it when they're sitting as close to you as possible, so it's,
oh, yeah.
Which is a lot less
it's
cute.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. They're not like pandas.
Right. But not all animals can sneeze.
Right. So sharks actually cannot sneeze. That has to do with their anatomy. So they have noses, they have nostrils, but their nostrils, to be able to sneeze, you need to have the air or water move from the lungs to the nose and then outside. But sharks' nostrils, which are right below their snout, they use them for smelling, but they don't join up to the back of the throat like our nose does, so they can't sneeze.
Oh.
So if something bothers them or bothers their nostrils, they sort of have to shake it free.
Oh, okay. So they can't sneeze, but they just kind of shake their head to
yeah.
get rid of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they can get rid of foreign particles.
Okay. Well, it's good that they have something that they can do if they can't sneeze.
Exactly. Exactly. And sharks also, like humans, don't say God bless you.
No. Well, you were talking before about what African wild dogs and how they communicate using sneezes. And, you know, while people may not do that, we do tend to say things after people sneeze.
Right.
That are, you know, like these kind of important things. So, you know, like whether it's, you know, God bless you or Gesundheit or, you know, or just bless you. So where did that come from?
Well, the God bless you or the sort of blessing seems to have come from ancient times when sneezes were thought of as bad omens or warnings from gods.
Ah.
And there's a story about Pope Gregory the Great in AD 590. It was during the plague that was wreaking havoc in Europe, and he had thought and shared this with others that the sneeze was an early sign that you had the plague. And so he ordered all European Christians to say a blessing to help counter that spread, basically.
Right. Because, of course, if you're getting sick, that would absolutely make a difference.
Exactly.
Sure.
So sneezes were not thought of as great. And some, even in ancient times, thought that sneezes somehow let in evil spirits. And so a blessing would help to keep out those evil spirits. So there are some weird things. And we don't even think about it today, you know, saying God bless you, or many of us don't.
No, we don't. Well, we generally don't associate sneezing with evil spirits anymore.
No.
But sneezing is, you know, is generally associated with either something, you know, with something being wrong with you or, you know, you potentially being sick. But sneezing itself could also even be, you know, can sometimes be something that can hurt you.
Oh,
yeah. And we're going to talk about that next. So we know that sneezes can be pretty powerful, but can they be dangerous? Because, you know, you can feel like this explosive release when you're, especially for a really big sneeze, but, you know, but can you actually hurt yourself doing it?
And that's the subject of today's mystery. Is it safe to hold in a sneeze?
So we've talked about the stages of a sneeze. There's irritation, which is nerve stimulation, and then that causes this reflex action. And so what happens during that is that your glottis, which is the part of the larynx, the hollow organ that holds your vocal cords, the glottis is the vocal cords and the opening between them. So that area closes. And then the pharynx, which is the cavity between the nose and the mouth, gets constricted. So you've got this closure happening following the irritation. Then there's a rapid increase of pressure around the lungs. So that pressure builds up, and then the glottis reopens suddenly and the air is expelled very quickly. At up to, what did you say, up to 93 miles an hour or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so when that happens, of course, you know, you probably notice that when you sneeze, your eyes involuntarily close, right? I mean, have you ever, like, do you sneeze with your eyes open? Do you remember sneezing with your eyes open ever?
No, but I always think about it when I'm driving, that I don't want to sneeze because I don't want to close my eyes. It's just a thing, you know?
No, definitely. That happens to me too. So sometimes when that happens, I think, oh, you know, I better hold the sneeze in. But actually.
Exactly.
But then I remember, I don't know when I first heard about this, but that you're not supposed to hold in a sneeze because if you try to keep your eyes open while you're sneezing, that you know, your eyes will pop out.
Okay, so I've heard this too. When I was in high school, I remember hearing this. Is there any truth to this urban myth?
Well, this is actually something that some say that this can be traced to the idea of like a burst eyeball from, you know, from trying to keep your eyes open while you're sneezing. Some say this can be traced to an actual incident that was reported by the New York Times in 1882. So I tracked this down in the New York Times archive. So this is reported originally by the Indianapolis Times, then was reprinted in the New York Times. And this is from April 30th, 1882. It was described as a singular incident that was suffered by a woman named Miss Mary Hanrahan. And I'm reading from the account now. So while riding on a streetcar, she was seized with a sudden fit of sneezing and burst one of her eyeballs, from which she has since been suffering the most intense pain. And apparently the injury was so severe that she actually lost sight in that eye. And it mentions in the article that her doctor did say it was very uncommon, and especially since her eyeball, you know, hadn't been, you know, she didn't have any diseases. Her eye hadn't been damaged before the sneezing fit. She just had this sneezing fit. And
so it burst her whole eyeball, they said.
That is what the article said.
Why did it happen? Or what? How did they explain this?
Well, according to the article, the woman's doctor said that, and I'm quoting again, probably the sneezing was so rapid that the eyelid remained open, and this would have greatly increased the effect of the sudden strain. So basically what he was saying is that because she was sneezing so quickly, she wasn't able to close her eyes, and that the strain of keeping her eyes open was actually what led to her eyeball bursting. And that was, supposedly this is, you know, this was kind of like the foundation case report for, not case report, because it was just this little, you know, little tiny article in the Times, but that this is supposedly where that myth sort of sprang from, that if you keep your eyes open while you sneeze, that you'll pop your eyeballs.
It's so amazing. I mean, almost 150 years ago or whatever, you know, that this myth may have started and we're hearing about that.
Well, because the thing is, because there's not a whole lot of, there aren't any medical case reports to back this up. So this is really, this is like the one recorded account that people can point to and say, well, you know, this is something that the Times wrote about. So maybe people thought it was true.
So is it something that people should be worried about?
Well, that's the thing. Although this myth is very widespread, Dr. David Houston, who's an associate dean at Texas A&M College of Medicine, Houston, an allergist at Houston Methodist Hospital, he actually said in a statement about this that there is little to no evidence that this is at all possible. And he said that in a violent sneeze, yes, increased pressure builds up, but it doesn't build up behind the eyes or in the eyes, but in the blood vessels around the eyes. And actually, you can see, so in a violent sneeze, this pressure can rupture capillaries, which are small blood vessels. And then once they're broken, right, then you can see that, you know, you can see that in the person's face, or you could see it in the whites of the eyes. But it's just the capillaries that will rupture. That's still, it's not enough pressure to actually pop an eyeball.
So maybe that's what happened with Miss Hanrahan.
Because it wasn't a full case report. It was just this, you know, like just a couple of paragraphs that the New York Times reprinted from the Indianapolis Times.
It's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a ton of detail about it, but it seems like what happened to her was probably just, you know, if it did happen the way that the doctor described it, that it was just this, you know, this incident that was just so singular that it has never been repeated since then.
Okay. So if you most likely can't pop an eyeball out by keeping your eyes open while you're sneezing, can a powerful sneeze, can you hurt yourself?
It is. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So because the pressure that builds up when you're about to sneeze is pretty significant, it is possible to hurt yourself through, you know, like very powerful sneezing can do it, especially in the case where you've had recent sinus surgery. So in that case, what can happen is that a very violent sneeze can push air into the space around the eye, and it can actually make the eye bulge, or it can push air into the brain cavity. And this can cause, you know, severe headaches, or in some cases, even a stroke.
Okay, it's so scary because it's a reflex.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why, sometimes I would imagine that if you have had recent sinus surgery, this is probably one of the warnings. You probably get warnings from your doctor about practices, you know, just because you can never tell until you actually sneeze how strong it's going to be. So, and there are things that you can do to stop yourself before you sneeze.
Right.
So if you're like in a situation where because of an injury or because of surgery, you're higher risk for something like this, then that might be something that you get advice from your doctor to do. But another thing that can happen with violent sneezing is that because, you know, like when you sneeze really hard, it just kind of makes your neck snap. There's like a sudden extension of the neck. And this can, you know, this can result in neck injury.
Well, I think of whiplash kind of, you know.
Right. In it, like, and again, it's, you know, this is, these are all very extreme cases. So, you know, for people that are generally healthy, that don't have previous injuries,
this is, you know, this is probably not going to happen to you. I mean, if you think about how often people sneeze and how infrequently, you know, how many times have you sneezed in your lifetime, and have you ever given yourself whiplash sneezing?
Right.
So, and then one more that's actually, it's probably less, you know, less harmful and, you know, more embarrassing, but violent sneezes can also cause momentary incontinence.
Oh my gosh. So, okay, that's weird.
Yeah. But, you know, again, just, you know, just this is something that happens generally in cases where people have either pre-existing conditions or other issues that, you know, where a sudden action like that would, you know, trigger a big response.
So I think I was telling you about this earlier, but a friend of mine in high school got into a bad car accident, and I'm not sure what the injuries were or the injury that led to this warning, but his doctors told him that it would be dangerous for a temporary amount of time, you know, a period of time for him to sneeze. And they told him to try to stifle his sneezes if he could.
Wait, now, by stifle his sneezes, they meant try and stop the sneeze before it happens, right?
Oh,
yeah.
You're right. So they told him to press below his nose or above his lip. And it actually does work. I mean, if you can feel one coming on.
I've heard that. But trying to stifle a sneeze, like once you feel it coming, like, and you're about to sneeze and you just swallow it,
right,
that is a terrible idea. And this is...
Okay,
yeah,
okay,
no,
okay.
No, and that's something that is actually a way you can actually hurt yourself by doing that. So this is actually, there's a term for this. It's called a Valsalva maneuver. And this is named after a 19th century Italian anatomist. I had to look this up because, of course, I had to look this up.
Yeah, right.
whose name was Antonio Valsalva. So that's where this came from. So what that does is, so it's almost like when you, you know, when you're on an airplane and you kind of close your nose and you blow out through your ears to try and clear your ears because of the pressure. Okay.
Yeah.
This is, it's similar to that because basically what you're doing is you're rerouting the pressure that builds up and releases during a sneeze. This and what this is doing, so if you can feel like if you're about to sneeze and you just kind of clamp down, the pressure doesn't just automatically dissipate. What you're doing is you're forcefully blowing air against your closed glottis that quickly changes the pressure in your chest cavity. And this can dramatically affect the flow of blood back to the heart, the amount of blood that the heart pumps out. It can affect arterial pressure. It can affect heart rate. In fact, this is actually something, this technique is actually something that doctors recommend doing if your heart is beating too fast because it slows your heart down.
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, I guess we think if the air could come out at 93 miles per hour, that's a lot of action that needs to happen. But that's unbelievable. But it is unbelievable that a sneeze could do that or a stop.
Yes, it's got to come out somewhere. Well, if you think about what you were talking about, how, you know, the speed of a sneeze. So, you know, like 93 miles per hour, you know, like a wind, 93 miles an hour. What does that translate into as far as pressure?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the pressure it generates. And so on average, the pressure that's generated in the nasal airway by a sneeze is about 0.1 pound per square inch, you know, which doesn't sound, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot. But when you think about the impact that that has on soft body tissues, it can actually be pretty significant, and suppressing can increase that pressure by up to 24 times, scientists have found in studies.
Yeah, that does sound like a lot.
Yes. So what happens if you block a sneeze? You can injure your diaphragm. You can burst blood vessels in the white of the eye. This can force air up the eustachian tubes in your ears, which is the canal that connects the middle ear to the back of the nasal cavity in the throat. And when you do that, that can, with enough force, that can rupture the eardrum, that can injure the inner ear, which can, you know, that can lead to hearing loss or vertigo. Doing this can also weaken blood vessels in the brain and momentarily elevating the blood pressure, you know, so quickly and so intensely can even lead to rupturing blood vessels.
Who knew a sneeze mystery could be so gruesome? Oh my God.
Well, researchers in 2016 knew because they looked at 52 case reports of sneeze-related injuries.
Oh gosh, of course.
And they published a study on this. Yeah, so they compiled all of these into a single review called The Dangers of Sneezing.
Oh my gosh.
A review of injuries. So this is 52 case reports, and this is in the Journal of Rhinology and Allergy in 2016.
So what did they find?
They looked at decades of sneeze-related injuries going back to 1945. And what they found was that most of these people, like 65%, did not have prior injuries. So they were not considered, you know, high risk for hurting themselves sneezing.
Like they hadn't had sinus surgery or something like that.
No. No, they had no, you know, they hadn't recently had surgery. They hadn't had recent injuries. They had no diseases that would have, you know, that would have weakened anything. They also found that this was more common in men than in women. So 81% of the cases were in men. And the injuries were pretty widespread. They actually drew they had an illustration of a person, and then they had illustrated all of the different places on the human body that where these people had hurt themselves by suppressing sneezes for the most part, or through very powerful sneezes. And so the injuries that they found included hearing loss, a fractured cheekbone, a displaced dental implant,
oh gosh,
a thyroid fracture, a rib fracture, a diaphragm tear, and a lung hernia.
Yeah, the only one I could ever, not relate to, but that makes sense to me that I'd ever think of is the rib fracture. The rest of them just sound crazy.
I'm trying to think if I've ever, hurt myself sneezing. I think that there have been times where, I've had allergy-related sneezes where I've sneezed, so hard that I actually, I could feel, that it actually hurt my throat.
Yeah, I've done that, too. But so what's the lesson here from all of this?
Well, I think the big lesson is that if you feel a sneeze coming, no matter how big, don't hold back. Just let it out and just sneeze big.
Be a power sneezer.
Be a power sneezer. That's the lesson.
When you have to sneeze, sure, letting it out is the safer thing to do under most circumstances. But what if you happen to be in space? For astronauts living in microgravity in the International Space Station, many everyday bodily functions are handled a little differently than they would be on Earth, and sneezing is no exception. Here to talk to us about that today is Chelsea Goad, staff writer at space.com, a sister site of Live Science. Chelsea, thanks for joining
us today. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, sneezing is one of those things that we take for granted. We usually don't even think about it. We just do it. Is it different for someone who's on a spacecraft or on the ISS?
That's a great question. It is actually very different. So, when we're on Earth, when we sneeze, we, tuck our nose into our elbow if we're, being careful, or we cover our nose with a tissue or something, and it's not too big of a deal. Even if we just totally forgot and just sneezed outright, you wouldn't see all of the sneeze particles floating around like you would in space. So if you're an astronaut on the space station and you sneeze, all of that phlegm, all of that mucus, all of that whatever flies out of your nose, whatever has been lurking up there, will just kind of float around until you contain it and dispose of it. So it wouldn't be that great to sneeze on the space station and just walk through it. It would be pretty disgusting. So astronauts on the space station have to be really careful about, sneezing into something like a tissue and containing it so there aren't loose phlegm particles all over the station. Now it becomes extra complicated when you go out onto a spacewalk, because then you're in a pressurized suit with a helmet on and sneezing right onto the front of the helmet that you are using to see through is pretty bad. It's pretty gross, obviously, but it's also it could be life-threatening because you're out in the vacuum of space and then suddenly you can't see because your visor is covered in mucus. So it's definitely dangerous.
Do they try to hold it in if they're on a spacewalk?
I'm sure they try. But actually what I've heard from a couple different astronauts is that they really just try to aim. It might sound gross, but they literally just try to aim kind of below the visor in their helmet so that they don't sneeze all over it. But one thing that some astronauts do to kind of mitigate the need to sneeze is they use their microphone in the helmet, or some have even gone as far as to attach pieces of Velcro to the inside of their spacesuit helmets to kind of itch their noses on so that, if you kind of feel a sneeze coming on, you itch your nose, maybe you can deal with it.
Yeah, those are really good hacks.
But yeah, I mean, there are no reports to my knowledge of astronauts holding in sneezes and talking about it later on in space or having any kind of negative consequences. I know that, I recently did an interview with Mike Massimino, and he was like, all right, I'll tell you an embarrassing story.
Oh my God, we love embarrassing stories.
He was on a spacewalk, and it goes quickly from day to night and day to night. So they have to, change their nighttime visors up and down so that they can see. And he forgot and just left his daytime visor down while it was kind of nighttime, so to speak, outside. And so he couldn't see anything. And he just assumed that he was dying.
No.
That was, he was just like, all right, I guess I'm just dying on this spacewalk. All right, this is it for me. And just slowly felt his way back into the space station. And then looked in the mirror and immediately realized and the astronaut he was out there with, he was like, well, didn't you say anything? And he was like, I didn't want to embarrass you over NASA.com. Because he was just fumbling out there with his visor on, just completely blind, like just forgot to put it up.
Oh, wow.
He was like, yeah, I just come to terms with the fact that I was going to die.
And he was so stoic about it.
Yeah, just so calm, cool, collected. He's like, yeah, you know, I guess it was it, you know.
A lot of sneezes are from irritants like dust or dry air. But what happens if an astronaut gets sick while they're in space?
The space station is equipped with, you know, first aid kits and basic medicines that might be applicable to astronauts if they were to get sick with things that could be predicted. I mean, you know, NASA and other space agencies and companies do try to make sure that that doesn't happen with a pre-flight quarantine. So all astronauts since the earliest days of Apollo have been quarantined 2 weeks before flight so that they don't bring anything up with them that could get them sick. But like we learned in the first days of Apollo before the quarantine, if you don't do that, you can get sick in space. And actually, the first Apollo astronauts, they had upper respiratory infections in space. They were sneezing, they were coughing, they were sick. They ran out of all of the medicine on board. And so it has happened. It's not impossible. And so, you know, what I would assume is they would, of course, try to distance themselves on the space station, but that's not really an option. I mean, they're in pretty close quarters. And so they would probably just, you know, take, you know, the medication as prescribed by doctors down on the ground. They would, of course, be corresponding with medical staff at NASA to kind of guide them through that and kind of just keep their fingers crossed. I mean, in a very serious circumstance, it's possible that they would fly them home. But there was actually even one instance where an astronaut in space had a blood clot. And remotely, by talking with doctors back on the ground, they were able to at least temporarily kind of solve the issue.
As long as we're on the subject of getting sick, as it happens, we're recording this episode just a few days before the scheduled SpaceX launch on Saturday, May 30th, which was rescheduled from Wednesday, May 27th. It's the first crewed launch to the ISS from the U.S. since 2011, when NASA's space shuttle program ended. And to bring this back to sneezing, it's also taking place under very unusual circumstances when much of the country is self-isolating because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and people are being exceptionally careful about doing anything that could spread contagion. How is that affecting these astronauts and everyone involved in the mission?
Definitely. So, you know, obviously they still did the standard pre-flight quarantine. So about 2 weeks before their first launch date, which was actually on Wednesday the 27th, they entered a pretty strict quarantine. So absolutely no direct contact with anyone who was not also in quarantine conditions. And so they have been in that kind of environment and living arrangement since 2 weeks before Wednesday. And so that is a standard part of spaceflight, but one that they were especially careful to be strict about and careful of, obviously, because it's during a pandemic. Now, in addition to that, kind of a almost easier on them in one way, because since there's a pandemic, both of the astronauts' families were already living in quarantine conditions. So they were actually able to quarantine with their families at home until they arrived at Kennedy, which is kind of a unique, interesting thing. And I'm curious if that will be a thing with future crewed launches with SpaceX from the U.S. But in addition to all that, both NASA and SpaceX have been just being extra careful, making sure that the astronauts don't directly interact with anyone on any of the teams who have not been in quarantine conditions. And of course, I know on that same note, making sure that the rest of their thousands of employees are also being safe. And so, you know, maybe it was like a month ago now, maybe more, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine kind of mandated that all non-essential NASA workers had to work remotely. And so they've really been limiting staff on site. They've been making sure that if people really need to be in the same room together, they've literally been putting up glass walls between them. And so they've really been kind of just going to extra lengths to be careful about everything.
And to end on a lighter note, sneezing isn't the only bodily function that behaves a little differently in space. What are some other adjustments that astronauts have to deal with?
I guess to put it vaguely, everything floats in microgravity. So whatever bodily function is happening, whatever is coming out of you or what have you, is going to float in microgravity. And so, for example, their toilet system is like a series of tubes and vacuums, and they hate it, but, you know, it has to be what has to be. And so that is certainly a major adjustment, just going to the bathroom in general with this weird, almost camping style, splash vacuum sealed toilet. And then in addition to the weird bathroom habits they have to adjust to, every part of their everyday hygiene to make sure that they are staying clean, which is part of that just general well-being on space station. You know, everything from washing their hair to even washing their hands has to be very controlled. You can't just, you know, open a faucet. You have to, every little ounce of water that you use or squirt out has to be carefully monitored and disposed of. And, you know, I mean, the space station does have a kind of vent and filtration system. So if tiny little water particles get out into the air on space station, it will eventually get into the filtration system. And so it's not going to be floating around there forever. But pretty much everything they have to be extra careful of, and everything works a little bit differently in space. I mean, you know, even just human physiology. I mean, that's a kind of growing field of study. So we don't perfectly understand how the body changes in space, but pretty much everything is different in space. I mean, they've found that astronauts coming home after a year in space have long lasting differences in how they are physically.
I've been talking to Chelsea Goat, a staff writer at space.com. You can follow her on Twitter. The link is in the show notes. Chelsea, thanks so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Mindy.
Thanks for joining us today for Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. Today's sneezing mystery, Is It Safe to Hold in a Sneeze?, is available as a Life's Little Mysteries article on our website, livescience.com.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more Life's Little Mysteries and for the latest science news. You can also join the conversation in our Live Science forums, where you can pose Life's Little Mysteries questions of your own or even suggest topics for upcoming podcast episodes. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes.
What will we talk about next? It's a mystery.
Literally. It'll be another Life's Little Mystery.
Life's Little Mysteries is produced in conjunction with Audio Boom as part of their Audio Boom Originals network.